traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
Listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is a show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 340. We're currently recording from the Gas Compression Association's 29th annual expo and conference in Galveston at Moody Gardens, Mark.
It's such a beautiful venue. The weather is perfect. I just finished delivering a keynote. I had a bunch of fun there. I made some new friends. Love this place. Love these guys. Looking forward to working with them again in the future. But just, you know, what a great place. And I really appreciate the invite to come not only do a keynote, but actually to record Oil and Gas This Week.
Yep. Couldn't be happier. And the weather is perfect.
And we actually have people sitting down to listen to us.
Ooh, thanks for coming
by. We never
have
that happen.
Yay. Well, sometimes we do. Sometimes we do. Anyway, we've got some reviews to talk about.
Wait, before we get to the review, if you want to leave us one, just go in the show notes. There's a link. It's very easy. If you want to try to remember, it's lovethepodcast.com, OGTW. Easiest thing to do is just go to links, hit it, and you can leave us a review. What do we have up as far as reviews?
We got one from Alejandro Ramirez, petroleum engineering student, National University of Columbia. Hi there, Paige and Mark. I would like to say congratulations for making this an excellent podcast. It's a great way to keep up the community informed and a great way for our students in Latin America to practice the English. Greetings from Medellin, Colombia, and thanks for all.
You know, we have listeners in all 205 countries on the planet, but I love the fact that we actually have listeners in Colombia. I actually spent a bit of time there about 20 years ago, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and the people there are just absolutely wonderful, and the food is to die for.
Good. I've never been.
Well, we need to get...
So thanks for rubbing that in my face.
We need to get Ms. Ramirez to give us an invite to come to Columbia, come to the university, and record a podcast for the students.
All right.
In English. That would help all of them.
There you go. All right, let's get into the news stories. So this week, we've got House passes Protecting American Energy Production Act, and this actually happened today.
Yeah, so this is breaking news. I cannot believe this passed the House. Now, it still has to pass the Senate, but basically, this bill prohibits the president from declaring a moratorium on the use of hydraulic fracking unless Congress also authorizes the moratorium. So first thing, it's a damn shame that we had to actually pass a law to keep our current administration from abusing their executive privileges. But I do like the fact that now Congress has to authorize any type of moratorium, regardless of what the president has to do. Like I said, this passed the House. It has to get through the Senate. Looking at it, Paige, it's going to be pretty close. You would think that this would not pass the Senate in our current administration, but I think it has probably about a 55% chance of passing because this is really just basically common sense.
Yeah.
Regardless of who's in the White House and regardless who wins this presidential election, we need to rein back some of these executive actions on both sides. That executive action was written in times of emergency. The president, regardless of what sides has power, is not supposed to use executive privilege to get around Congress.
Right.
And by passing this law, that regardless who wins the election now or 20 years from now, you will not be able to get around Congress if you want to try to ban hydraulic fracking. This is a wonderful thing. It's actually both sides actually help author this bill. So, you know, hats off to both of them for doing the right thing. Let's see if this thing gets through the Senate. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, California bill seeks closure of depleting wells near communities.
So, I love you, California, but some of the stuff you do makes no fiscal sense, right?
Right.
So, basically, this is the same old thing that a lot of municipalities and some states have tried to use to prevent either the production of existing wells or the drilling of new wells. So, basically, they're saying that any low-volume well, which you and I know is a stripper well,
right?
Anything that does 12 barrels a day or less, if it's within 3,200 feet of a habitat dwelling, whether it's a house, a school, a convenience store, they will then be in violation and they're going to be fined. They're saying they're going to use the money generated from those fines to P&A or plug and abandon those wells. All that makes total sense, right? On the surface, you want to guess. Now, remember, California, even though it has tons of hydrocarbons, are importing hydrocarbons from other countries that don't produce hydrocarbons as clean as we do. Environmentally, if California would produce their own hydrocarbons under their feet, they would be much better for the environment. What they've done is stopped all of that, and now they're buying hydrocarbons from Russia or from the Middle East, which or from China even, which is really much worse for the environment. But by having this stripper well law that they're imposing, it's going to drop the amount of what's left of California's natural production by 41%.
Oh,
they already can't produce enough to satisfy their own needs. They're already buying hydrocarbons from countries that don't care about the environment or the safety. Now they're going to reduce their own production, which is minimal at best, by 41%. This is insanity, California. You think you're paying high gasoline prices now? You're going to drive gasoline up to $8 or $9 a gallon. Oh, and you think you're going to have all EVs by 2035? Let's see how that works out for you. This is utterly ridiculous why they would want to do this. And then even though it's a low-producing well, I had to spend a little time doing research on this because, like, why would you go after stripper wells or low-volume wells? You know why?
Why?
Because it's the easiest one. The people that own these wells don't have the money to fight back. Right?
That makes sense.
So if you're in a high production well, like we know our buddies up in Kern County and Bakersfield, the companies that own those wells are companies that can fight back, like Chevron, like Pioneer, whatever. Yeah. The companies that own these wells are small independent operators. This is granddad's oil company started, you know, 100 years ago, and it's a family-run operation, or, you know, it's a small trustee that runs it. It's not major corporations. So by going after these smaller production wells, what California doing is going after the operators that can't afford the money to can't fight back in court. So, California, you go reap what you sow. By cutting your own production by 41%, I don't know what you're going to do, but your citizens will pay for this through taxes and their costs they have to pay for energy.
All right, next up, Libya oil minister suspended pending investigation.
How bad does it have to be?
Yeah.
When the government in Libya suspends their own minister for corruption.
It's got to be pretty bad.
That's like the Italian mafia saying, you know what, you didn't pay your taxes, right? So we're going to take you out of the mob. So anyway, Libya's oil minister, Mohamed Oyn, has been suspended from office. He's under investigation for what? Corruption, of course.
What else could
now,
it be?
Now, the interesting, we talked about this before, where remember the workers in Libya refinery were on strike because they had not been paid in, was it 3 months?
Yeah.
It was 3 months,
right.
And they kept on working, and they finally went on strike because they weren't getting paid. And then we had armed conflict breakout, which is a hard one to judge. I never like to see somebody pull out weapons when there's a disagreement because something bad always happens. But if the Libyan government didn't pay their own employees at the refinery for 3 months, I don't know what else these poor people could do.
Yeah.
And the fact they kept working for 3 months, well, now it looks like they're trying to clean up things. And I suspect the reason they're trying to clean up things is that this whole Russian-Ukraine conflict, I think, is nearing its end. And OPEC itself is going to have to increase production. And the areas in the Middle East that are part of OPEC that have been war-torn need investment for infrastructure. So Libya has tons of hydrocarbons. They have no way to get it to market because over the years and years of warfare and strife, they destroyed terminals and shipping docks and pipelines and processing facilities. And so I think what they're doing is they're trying to clean up. And this poor, I say poor, he's not poor, but this Libyan oil minister, I think, is a scapegoat for the corrupt government to say it was all his fault, which is not. But I suspect that not only will he end up in jail, I also suspect, unfortunately, and I don't want this to happen, I think he'll probably just disappear. And
like,
the government's going to blame
a lot of
stuff.
Russians.
Like a lot of the Russians. So this is kind of expected to happen right now. You know, Libya's output is below 700,000 barrels a day. If they can get the right people involved and they can quit this bickering internally and stop at least some of this corruption, they can easily do 1 million barrels a day, which then would help the world in this energy crisis that we're in right now. So let's keep an eye on this one.
All right. OPEC and China conduct high-level energy meeting.
Let me translate this. OPEC needs somebody to buy their oil. China has a voracious appetite for oil. They don't care where it comes from. They're the ones buying sanctioned Russian oil right now. And so this is just a meeting between a supplier and a buyer to make sure they're on the same page. Now, I actually sort of like some of this. So when I think of what's going to happen in the future in this world, one of the countries I am worried about is China. I'm not real worried about an armed conflict with the U.S., although that's in the realm of possibilities. I'm worried about the economic conflict we're in now. And what I don't want to see happen is China continue to grow their economic reach and form partnerships in other parts of the world to supply them with cheaper energy. Remember, if China can get cheaper energy than the U.S. can get, that gives them a leg up on manufacturing things at a cheaper price, which is the key to their economy. Here in the U.S., we manufacture a lot, but we buy a lot. China doesn't buy a lot, right? So this is one of the ways that China's trying to make sure they keep the prices down for energy, which helps their poor people. I'll give them a full credit for that. It helps them take their people out of the rural agrarian life, but it also helps them manufacture finished goods cheaper than here in the U.S. And if you remember, right before the pandemic, the cost of electricity was getting so cheap in the U.S. that manufacturing jobs were coming back, actually even compared to China. Because of our infrastructure and the cheap electricity, we could actually afford to manufacture some things cheaper than China could. The one that pops in my head is, you know, the men and women's underwear company, Hanes. Hanes actually had all its manufacturing done in China, and they started bringing T-shirts and underwear manufacturing back here because they could do it cheaper here than they could in China. Now, the pandemic hit, screwed all that up. Then we had an energy shortage in the world. Right. So, you know, this sort of needs a reset. But the whole reason that China is working with OPEC here is to secure their energy needs in the future at a price point where they can manufacture things cheaper than the U.S., which is part of their economic strategy in competing with the U.S. on the world market. Now, it sounds really bad. You have to remember, in the U.S., we do $4 trillion with a T, $4 trillion a day of buy and sell stuff every day. China's nowhere near close to that, but they're growing. And at some point, between, it'll either be them or India, they'll get really close to us as far as their economic model. And then we're just going to have to see. Both those countries have an enormous needs for more and more energy. Both of those countries are buying sanctioned Russian oil. Although we talked about in the last episode where the U.S. State Department did something cool and started monitoring the tankers. So now India can buy all the Russian oil they want, but there's no way to get it to India. But you know what? That just puts in China's pocket, once all again, right, giving them cheaper energy costs. We absolutely need to keep an eye on and see where this thing goes.
All right. Iraq and Iran will expedite development of sanctions, busting shared oil fields.
So this is a gray area as far as sanctions. So there's some fields that both Iraq and Iran share that, depending on what point in history you're looking at it, one or the other or both own these areas of land. And so because one or both of them don't legally own these shared areas, some of that oil is not sanctioned. So it makes sense, even though they don't like each other, it makes sense for them to work together. This way they can produce more oil, sell it outside the sanctions because of where it comes from, and split the revenue. The idea is fantastic, especially since the war in Russia and Ukraine is still going on. That's still affecting supply. Yeah, what's going on with Israel and Hamas, which is affecting transportation through the Red Sea. You know, most of the super tanker business companies are starting to go around the Red Sea because of the risk there. This would be a way to get officially unsanctioned oil on the market that would benefit both Iran and Iraq. However, I don't think they're going to be able to keep the partnership going long enough.
Oh, probably not.
It's a tribal mentality in that part of the world. And a lot of people don't understand tribal mentality, especially here in Europe. We've never been exposed to it. Some of those disagreements go back hundreds and hundreds of years, and they don't forget it. So on paper, this looks really good. And if they pull it off, it would be wonderful. It would start the road to peace. It would start allowing both companies to start building infrastructure, which would help their population.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're going to be able to stay in agreement long enough to actually pull this thing off. If they do, it'd be good for them. So once again, we'll keep an eye on this and see where it goes.
Okay, next up, we've got Russia's offline oil refining capacity reaches 14%.
You got to give it to the Ukrainians. You know, when that war first started, I've said this 100 times, I expected Russia to run through Ukraine in a week.
I remember
Ukraine
that.
Citizens stopped them. They are fierce fighters. They're not going to give in. The whole country is fighting back. Now, unfortunately, both countries are about bankrupt. Both countries are struggling to have frontline troops that are trained in any shape or fashion. They're basically, I think this war is going to come to a stalemate. Both sides will probably claim some type of victory. But in this case, what's happened is the Ukraine youngsters basically are taking consumer-grade drones, the same stuff you and I can buy,
right,
arming them with light minor munitions, so things like a frag grenade or whatever, and they're just dropping them on tanks, dropping it on Russian soldiers, and in this case, they're dropping it on refineries. And they've learned the vital points of the refineries to set stuff on fire. I shouldn't laugh because people are dying in this. So what's happened is Ukraine's done so much of this kind of minor drone attack on the Russian refineries that Russian refining capacity is down 14%, which means Russia's struggling to supply gasoline and diesel to its own people. Now, remember, Russia's main input for their economy is hydrocarbons. They make their money off oil and gas. But they also grow a decent amount of food. And what do you need to grow food? Diesel to run farm equipment. So this is going to affect their ability as we enter into spring to be able to plant enough food to harvest for next year. So I suspect local food price in that part of the world is probably going to go up from this. If Russia can't get a handle on this constraint in their own refinery, that means they're going to need to buy refined goods from other countries. There's two answers there, the U.S. or the Middle East. Now, obviously, the U.S., hopefully, knock on wood, is going to stick to the sanctions and not sell refined goods to Russia. The Middle East will. And the Middle East, if you remember, they've learned that just monetizing the upstream part of the market isn't good for their economy long-term-wise. And now they're trying to capture more of the oil and gas value chain. So they're actually building refineries, they're building ethylene crackers, they're building LNG facilities. So this could end up kind of flip-flopping things around where Russia ends up buying refined goods to the Middle East, even though they have their own crude because they don't have the refining capacity. And if that starts, especially since Russia's going to be bankrupt for a long time, they may not ever come back and repair the refineries. This may change the refining dynamics in the world. Whereas before, Russia exported a lot of refined goods, maybe they'll start being a net importer of refined goods. And that actually would be good because it kind of puts Russia on the same choke chain that Russia had on Europe forever with the export of natural gas so Europe could heat their homes. So this has a longer term implication. Let's keep an eye on this.
Okay. Next up is Texas fund manager BlackRock misusing funds to push ESG agenda.
So Texas told BlackRock, hey, there's $8.5 billion that you are manipulating for ESG metrics in the state of Texas. So you know what, BlackRock? You're out of here. They literally kicked BlackRock out, which was the right thing to do. Environmental social governance, ESG, I love it. Our industry, for the last 20 years, we have a handle on the environmental stuff. I put our environmental and safety practices against any other type of industry in the world. I put oil and gases, the way they look at the environment and the way they clean things up and the way they measure against any type of manufacturing, automotive, technology, whatever. Social, we've gotten better at it. We've learned to work better in our local communities that we operate in. We've learned that we need to respect the people's wishes, even though we may not agree with it. It's the government's part. It's that G that I think the oil and gas industry needs a little bit of help with. If you're a venture capital finance operator and you end up driving that company into the ground, bad decisions, and you go bankrupt and people lose their jobs, you should not walk away with a $20 million package. That's just wrong, right? And so they were working on that. However, BlackRock leveraged a lot of not just companies, but also state organizations around the U.S. to meet certain criteria that they thought was important, not the business market, not the shareholders, but they around ESG metrics. And if you didn't meet these ESG metrics, they wouldn't invest money in you. The state of Texas said that's not fair and that we want you out. So the Texas State Board of Education kicked BlackRock out of all the funds, the school funds in the state of Texas.
Good.
Because he said he had a duty to protect that. Now, remember, a lot of states, including Texas, makes a lot of money for their schools from the oil and gas royalties, right? And here in Texas, Railroad Commission and the Texas General Land Office make sure that money goes to the schools. BlackRock was trying to take a piece of that and hold it hostage.
Shame on them.
Shame on them. And they learned a lesson by doing it in Texas. And instead of just kicking them out of Texas, we enacted a bill. It's Bill 13 that mandates the state's comptroller to identify and list financial entities boycotting fossil fuel business. So if you're anti-fossil fuel business in the state of Texas, the state of Texas will not spend state funds with you, right? Which is our right as a state.
Right.
We believe that the oil and gas industry is important to the state's economy, important to our citizens, important to things like hospitals and schools. And if you want to boycott that, that's fine. We're just not going to give you any state money. Now with this ESG on BlackRock, Texas is sending a strong message to the world that if you want to do business here, you have to do it fairly. I love this. Not sure Larry Fink at BlackRock thinks this is a good idea. But if you look at what's going on with BlackRock, 100% of their ESG funds are either closed or in the process of being closed. All of them lost money. So if you were a shareholder in any of BlackRock's ESG funds, you're not happy anyway.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next one. OPEC. Oil industry needs $11 trillion in upstream investment by 2045.
And it's legit. What a lot of people don't understand is no individual, no government, no company has the time or money to go find all of the reservoirs in the world. Nobody's ever done that. So what they do is they go find however many reservoirs they need to keep running for the next 5 or 10 or 15 years, right? That's all they spend time and money on. That takes a lot of investment. You know, 3D seismic modeling, all that, advanced analytics, machine learning, big data stuff to find these reservoirs. The other thing that's going on is now they're finding existing reservoirs in old seismic data that the humans missed because the human couldn't see it, but the AI could. However, the world will continue to need energy. The amount of energy the world needs is going to continue to go up every year. Now, what's in contention is what is that percentage? Are we going to go up 2% in 2025 or 12%? That's what people argue about. But the fact is that need of energy will go up, and that so will the demand for hydrocarbons. In order to meet that demand, the oil and gas companies around the world, so the super majors, the majors, the independents, the nationalized oil companies, all have to invest money in exploration and production. They have not been doing that for a bunch of reasons. One is we came out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Probably the worst thing to ever happen to the oil and gas industry because it killed both the upstream side of the business, but also the downstream side of the business, which has never happened in our history. The other thing is here in the U.S., a lot of investment was made in the shale plays, but the investments were made for growth. So you would drill a well, have production numbers. You would go to your capital lender and say, here's the finances on this well. They would use that to borrow more money to drill another well. And it was all about growth. Well, that's almost like a Ponzi scheme. At some point, you can't keep growing. At some point, you got to pay all this debt back. What's happened post-pandemic is all of the major operators in the shale plays have learned to not invest money in growth, but invest money in profits. So that's why you saw almost no shale growth last year, even though offshore boomed last year. You will see shale growth starting this year and for the next couple of years, but it's going to be slow and measured. If the industry as a whole does not invest this $11.1 trillion in exploration and production, the reservoirs are there. We just won't know where these reservoirs are to tap into the future for production, which will then limit supply, which is going to drive the cost up at the pump, which is always bad for election, but it's also going to drive the price of energy up for everybody in the world. So by putting more investments in E&P so we can look forward the next 20 years and find these reservoirs, that's going to keep energy prices stable and low for everybody. Now, this article is written, where's this article? This is an oil price. This article is written like this needs to happen and we're not sure it will happen. I promise you it will happen. The nationalized oil companies, especially you know the big ones like Pemex, maybe not Pemex, that's a bad one, but Petrobras, Sinopec, Abu Dhabi, they're all looking at the next 20, 25 years where their barrels on reserve are going to come from, and the super majors especially. You know, Exxon, Shell, BP, Chevron, a lot of people call them big oil and they control the market. Not anymore. So here in the U.S., 90% of the hydrocarbons, 90% of the oil and gas that's produced is not produced by those companies. It's not produced by big oil. It's produced by independent operators, family-run businesses and such. Also, because of the nationalized oil company, you know, Exxon used to be able to go to Brazil and drill, make the right financial decision, invest their own capital. Now they can't. They have to, by law, do joint ventures with Brazil, with Petrobras. And so a lot of places in the world, the super majors can't drill like they want to. And so they're limiting their ability to have enough barrels on a reserve. So the money will be invested. You will also see a lot of stuff that's going to be different for our industry. We talked about a month ago about Chevron investing heavily in AI for geophysical.
Right.
The reason Chevron's doing that is instead of looking for new reservoirs out in the world, they want to go back and find reservoirs that everybody else missed, which they will with the AI. So just a good time to be an E&P. You know, E&P has always been the fun side of the industry. It's always been sexy, fast. That's where all the capital is invested. And for the last 10 years, it hasn't been. It's going to come back.
Good. That's good to hear. All right. Shell Aramco, Pioneer Natural Resources, among top-ranking oil and gas companies, Brand Finance reports.
I don't think this is right. I love you, World Oil. I'd love to see the raw data. I tried to find it. The best I could do is find the abstract. And this is the company that did the research is called Brand Finance. And they basically rated the world's strongest and most valuable oil and gas brands. So not companies, not based on profitability, cash flow, you know, EBITDA, any of that stuff. It's how do people feel about these companies?
Interesting.
So Shell came out as the world's most valuable oil and gas brand. If I think about it globally, I can see that, right? Mm-hmm. Poor Exxon is taking on the chin for all of us. You ask any young person that hates our industry, what company is the worst? And without knowing anything about Exxon, that's the first word that comes to mind. Everybody hates on Exxon, and they shouldn't. Now, Exxon needs to take responsibility for that because Exxon never says anything in the public about anything, whether it's good or bad. I did a tour of their facility, and a lot of people don't know this. When Exxon built that corporate campus up in Spring, when they grubbed the original trees, the native trees, they took about 60% of them, they put them in cold storage, and they paid a team of tree doctors to keep those trees alive for 4 years in cold storage. When they were finished building that campus, they replanted those trees. How many people know that? Nobody knows that. When I heard this, I go, Exxon, people think you're destroying the planet. You're causing climate chaos. Why don't you tell this story? And the Exxon representative told me, we don't brag. It's like, that's not bragging. That's helping the world understand what you do. And Exxon still has that mentality.
So
I can see Exxon not having the number one brand, but I would put Chevron and BP above Shell when I think about it globally. So like I said, I couldn't find the raw data. All I could find was the abstract. But basically, this article saying Shell is the number one most valuable oil and gas brand, and then Aramco, and then PetroChina, then Sinopec. Once again, I find that hard to believe. Aramco, maybe. Sinopec, no way. And PetroChina, nobody even knows who PetroChina is unless you're in the industry.
Yeah.
And then Qatar Energy came up really close too. I find all of this suspect. Anyway, like I said, Brand Finance, if you're listening, I'd love to see the raw data that you made this, that this came from, because I don't actually agree with your list. Although I can see Shell as number one. Okay. And honestly, it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. Okie doke. Court upholds 2022 onshore oil and gas lease sales following Biden's unlawful leasing ban.
Yeah, so if you remember, President Biden administration put a ban, actually got the Bureau of Land Management to ban 160 some odd leases in Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Nevada, and I think Colorado. And the reason they did that, I am laughing. The reason they did that is they said that the greenhouse gas analysis was done incorrectly, which it wasn't. So all these companies chipped in that were wanting to bid on these leases. They went back and redid the analysis on the greenhouse gases, submitted back to BLM, and they did nothing, nothing at all. So it went back to court, and it looks like the decision is finally made. The BLM actually came out and said, we're not an expert on greenhouse gases, which I can't believe they finally admitted that. They brought in their own experts. A lot of that was handled by Western Energy Alliance and their experts, which is an insider group. We actually know them. They brought their scientists in, and their scientists' legal argument won the judge over. And so now the court has said that the Biden's administration on banning these leases in those states I just named on land is unlawful. And those leases are actually supposed to start happening in about 2 months to go out for auction, which is great.
Dow announces intent to invest a new world scale carbonate solvents facility in the U.S.
This is amazing. So basically, you're taking the carbon dioxide from things like ethylene crackers, the brewers, people that make ethanol, any place you can get concentrated carbon dioxide, you'll make a carbonic solvent, which makes everything, including lithium ion batteries. This is Dow doing something they're really good at, which is taking an existing process and learning how to make it commercially viable at scale. This is good for everybody. It's going to create jobs. And since we have to hurry up and get out of here, I'm going to end it right there.
Okay. I guess we'll do rig count, huh?
Rig count? What's the rig count?
All right. U.S. is at down 5 at 624. Canada's down 38 at 169. Internationally, we're down 7 at 958.
And if you want to know about all the oil and gas events, including this conference, you could be sitting right in front of us like these gentlemen are, and ladies. Sign up for our oil and gas events newsletter. It's absolutely free. The link's in the show notes. Also, sign up for our Sunday update. That's the place where we do not give away Paige's dog, although it did accidentally happen.
Yes. Yeah.
Sign up, follow us on LinkedIn if you know all the stuff we're doing. Merchandise, our baby and kids clothing finally hit our merch store. And we actually had somebody publish a onesie that was blue. And somebody hit me up and asked me if it was a gender reveal. And it's like, not me.
No, not unless it's
but
like
if you want to do a gender reveal, buy our merchandise. It's great, especially if you're pro oil and gas. And if you have family members that hate the oil and gas industry and they have a baby, buy one of our pro oil and gas onesies for their baby. They'll love you for it. First Friday Q&A, you know the drill. Leave us a question. The goal is not to stump Paige and I, but to help educate our audience. Ready to get out of here?
Yep.
Remember, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.